This is Brewers on Tap.
Welcome into episode number 17 of Brewers on Tap, the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm your host, Jeff Levering, and don't forget to submit those questions each and every week to @Brewers on Twitter using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. A week ago, we had some great questions for second baseman Scooter Gennett, and this week, nothing different from the fans for Fox Sports Wisconsin Brewers reporter Sophia Minert, which you'll hear in a matter of moments on the podcast. The Brewers were on the road for much of last week, but they're in the midst of a six-game homestand with the New York Mets and their border rivals, the Minnesota Twins. More to come on the podcast about the weekend series against the Minnesota Twins and some of the great giveaways for fans over the weekend. As mentioned, the club was on the road in Kansas City and in Colorado last week, so now let's take a listen to last week's highlights.
And Braun hammers one into center field. That is way back. And goodbye, a home run for Ryan Braun. He loves hitting at Coors Field. And Braun, with his 14th home run of the season, gives the Brewers a quick 2-0 lead. Taylor Youngman, is this going to be the one? It is a flare. It is down, a base hit. And Peterson, after that bounces off of Gonzalez, will go to third. And the first hit in the big leagues for Taylor Youngman. They'll keep that baseball for Youngman. Lorenzo Cain rips one into left center. Oh, what a catch! Shane Peterson lays out.
Pitch swung on, line drive, base hit left field. Gordon will be waved. Peterson up with it. Here comes a throw to the plate. Lucroy catches, tags, got him at home. And a perfect strike to peg Gordon at the dish.
Shane Peterson with a diving catch and now an outfield assist, making his presence known in the big leagues.
The 0-1 from Fires, swinging a high fly into center. Back on it is Parra, still back on the warning track, reaches over his shoulder, and he makes the catch. Around second was Gordon. He's got a retouch, and he's able to get back to first base. Gerardo Parra over his shoulder on the warning track in deep center field, takes extra bases away from Rios.
You won't find a more difficult catch than the one that Parra just made.
Think two Rockies All-Stars, you're thinking Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki.
Right.
But not this year. That one's light. Oh, what a catch by Scooter Gennett going up the ladder to make that play. Looked like he caught that one behind him. The athletic Gennett takes a hit away from LeMahieu, give him a taste of his own medicine.
More defensive wizardry from Gerardo Parra, who's been filling in for Carlos Gomez, who's been battling that upper right leg injury. Shane Peterson has really emerged as a great defensive tool as well. Three outfield assists over his first couple of weeks in the big leagues. And Scooter Gennett with a nice leaping catch in Colorado as well. Ryan Braun broke out of an offensive slump, crushing a two-run home run at Coors Field. And right-hander rookie Taylor Youngman continued to pitch well and even added his first big league hit on Friday in Colorado. In this week's edition of Catching Up with the Crew, I sat down with Brewers first baseman and one of their great pinch hitters, Jason Rogers, to talk about the offense that got jump-started in Colorado and battling a tough Sun Field in Denver as well. Bullpen coach Lee Tunnell joins the program about the work of the bullpen so far, and former Brewers manager slash coach slash player and current Kansas City Royals hitting coach Dale Swain reflects on returning to Milwaukee last week for the first time in a couple of years.
Let's catch up with the crew.
as we're joined with Jason Rogers of the Brewers. And, Jason, you know, it's nice to have that offense come alive again. 9 runs, that's a big output for us recently.
Yeah, Braun got the start. Braun got a start for us in the beginning, the first inning, then Ramos, too. We did a good job again, good pitches and putting the good swings on the ball. Yaman pitched a good game for us. He helped us out a lot, you know, limited to a couple of runs. Bullpen did great as usual, but we got the job done.
How bad was the sun over at first base?
It was bad. It's the first time I wore glasses in a long time. I probably couldn't see until maybe the 6th, 7th inning until the sun went down. It was crazy.
And throws from the left side, I mean, once that sun's coming down, it's almost like they have to throw a one-hopper or two-hopper over to first base just for you to see it.
Oh, yeah, like Aramis, he did. He threw maybe a three-hopper at me. I'll take that over any in the sun any day. And it wasn't too bad. We got better as the game went on.
Has there ever been a ballpark that you've come through in the minor leagues that's kind of been as bad in terms of a sun field?
Yeah, Tennessee Smokies up there, Double-A, Philly of the Cubs. Yeah, it was real bad. That might have been worse, but it's been a while for that.
At least you got that third deck here that kind of takes it away a little bit, right?
Yeah, it took to the 5th or 6th inning to get it away, but it's okay.
And Jason Rogers is our guest, and you hit your first career triple yesterday. Have you caught your breath yet?
No, that's crazy. I didn't realize it was my first one. Yeah, I just did a good job of 2 strikes, you know, trying to get the runner over. And thankfully I got him in and trying to help this team win.
Well, you've done a great job this year, and it's been a more of a role for you coming off the bench, and you're one of the major league leaders in pinch hits this year, which is kind of cool. How is this new challenge? How have you adapted to this new role?
Just really practice and just stay mentally strong, you know, get my body loose when it comes to the 4th, 5th, 6th inning. Just last year helped me out, helped me out for this year. Spring training helped me out. I think I'm mentally stronger this year, you know, getting used to it. I'm getting comfortable with playing in the big leagues, and I'm just going to take it day by day, really.
How do you prepare for this? I mean, you talk about getting mentally ready to go about the 4th, 5th, 6th inning when you might be able to get in there and pinch hit, but it's really tough to come off the bench and face some of these guys that are throwing 100 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, you just got to have the confidence, really. I think that's helping me a lot. Just got to stay within yourself. Don't try to do too much. Know the situation and just know that you're only going to have one at bat, so you got to really concentrate on that at bat and just get the job done however you can.
Do you feel like you're more aggressive coming off the bench?
I would say I would, yeah. I'm more aggressive than I would be if I was starting the game, which is kind of not what I usually do, but it's okay. I've gotten used to it.
Do you feel good at the plate right now? How's the swing feel?
It feels good. You know, just getting better. You know, there's a couple of days off I haven't played for 2 or 3 days, and it kind of doesn't help. But, you know, once you get in there after a few at bats, get used to things, everything's –
How many flips do you take on a day-in and day-out base? I feel like you're out there every single day with Darnell Coles and with Coach Shelby.
Yeah, I guess because I pitch it, I'm taking a lot more swings than I usually do if I was starting. Let's see, in the cage, I'll probably swing, get loose, maybe take about 30 to 40, then come out here for early BP, take another 30, then 5th or 6th inning, probably take about 10 to 20. Not too much, really.
Well, whatever you're doing, it's working.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Bullpen coach Lee Tunnel. And Lee, the Brewers bullpen has certainly been performing at a very high level here over the course of the 2015 season, and you've got the big names that are in there, but some of the lesser known names like the Michael Blazics and Jeremy Jeffress have really taken their game to a new level here in 2015.
Well, they've got some really good guys to learn from, and Frankie and Brox and those guys, and the system here has been really good as far as their work day. They're really consistent with coming out every day. They get their work in. All the guys are they're really, really encouraging to one another, and they genuinely pull for each other when the other guy's on the mound, you know. So and it's hard enough to go out and compete in that capacity just when you feel like you're on your own. But this group of guys has really come together and really, really pull for each other.
When you look at the Kansas City bullpen and they have those defined roles, okay, Herrera's going to come in the 7th, Davis is going to come in the 8th, and you've got Holland who's going to close that out in the 9th. We have the system here with Milwaukee where you've got K-Rod who's going to come in the 9th in a safe situation, but that bridge to get to him is kind of varied on a day-to-day basis, and I think a lot of our players are kind of just next man up, all right, here we go, and they kind of accept that role.
Yeah, and really they all do just want the ball, you know, and you might be surprised to to know that there's guys that you can tell, you can look in their eyes and can tell they don't really want the ball that day, or, you know, but all these guys will take the ball. They actually want it, and they take pride in the unit. And, you know, we've had some crazy games, like going back to that 14 or 15 inning game, whatever it was, where, you know, guys were just having to get the job done, and that's basically what they've been doing.
As a bullpen coach, you've been a roving pitching instructor in your time as well. A lot of people don't know, but you actually go out there and play catch with a lot of the players, and you've got the catcher's glove, and that's not an easy job. Who's the hardest guy you've ever had to play flat ground catch with?
Well, anybody that throws a two-seamer, that, because sometimes, for some reason, sometimes two-seamers tend to go the other way, and that's not very good on the thumb. So anybody that has that is kind of rough. And all these guys are, you know, I love to play catch with any of them, you know, and that's just part of the day. And I was never a catcher, never caught a day in my life. I think my very first day of when my folks signed me up for Little League, I had the catching equipment on, but that was the only day, I think, and that was like when I was eight, so it's been a while.
So when you got this crazy-looking glove and you had to put it on for the first time, did it feel very foreign to you?
Well, I was happy to have it because there's a little more padding and all that. And actually, I was the bullpen coach in Cincinnati in 06, so I had a little bit of experience with it. And then over the years, you know, you play catch with guys, and you can see a lot of you can see a little more about how the ball spins when you're playing catch with a guy than just standing there and watching him.
One final question for you, Lee, and back to your playing days. You were telling me before we got on the air here that the radio broadcaster in Pittsburgh, when you were there, would have you do interviews for the radio station. So you essentially could do my job right now.
No, you're not near as well as you do it. But, yeah, I had a radio show that aired on drive time in the morning and afternoon called The Heart of Sports, and I'd just interview other guys. But that was back when we had the little portable cassette player that was about half the size of a loaf of bread, you know, and I had to actually physically mail the cassette tapes back to the station in Pittsburgh and all that. But that was fun, getting to know the other guys.
It's a different perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there's so much knowledge in the game, and for young players, I was, you know, 22, 23 years old at that time, and it just meant a lot to me to be able to talk with some of the older, more established pitchers and players from around the league, just to learn from what they had already been through in the game.
Well, I know my go-to next time I need a pregame interview. It's Lee Tunnel. Thanks so much for the time.
All right, thanks.
And our guest today is Dale Swaim, the hitting coach of the Kansas City Royals, and coming back to Milwaukee for the first time in a couple of years. What's it like coming back to Milwaukee every time you're back there?
Well, I mean, I spent, you know, 13, 14 years there playing and coaching, so it'll always be my second home, no doubt about it. And, you know, it was fun. It's always fun. There's still a lot of people over there that, you know, I have a lot of respect for and enjoy being around. Very good friends, you know, made a lot of friends throughout the city as well as the organization. So, you know, my son's playing up in Mequon in the Northwoods League, so I got to see him. So it was you know, it was a great trip. You know, it's always great going back there. I got to see the C-League experience, which was really, really cool. And so it's always cool to go back to Milwaukee, no matter, you know, if I'm on coaching there or coaching somewhere else. It's my second home.
I wanted to ask you about the C-League experience. You went through it with Ned Yost, who was a player in Milwaukee, and now he's your cohort here in Kansas City as the manager. What's it like going through that with Ned Yost and, you know, a guy who lived through the Bud C-League era in Milwaukee? What's it like going through that C-League experience for you?
Well, it was, I mean, the way they did it, I think, made it even more, you know, spectacular. You know, it's about 12, 15 minutes long, I guess, and you know, being there for so many years, I know the history behind you know, the Brewers leaving and or the Braves leaving and then getting the Brewers back, you know, 5 or 6 years later, and what Bud did for the city on a couple different occasions, obviously, and then to get Miller Park there, and what he had to go through to get Miller Park was not that easy. So you know, and what he's done for baseball as a commissioner and just as a friend. I mean, he was a great owner when I was playing there, you know, I can always consider him a friend, and it's a really neat thing they did, that's for sure.
I got to take you back to 1987 and team streak. And obviously, I chatted with Rob Deere earlier in the year, and he hit the big Easter Sunday home run. But you ended up winning the ball game in extra innings with a two-run shot. Take me back to team streak. And did that help you throughout the course of your career to kind of level out the ebbs and flows of your professional career and as a coach as well?
Well, I mean, obviously, as you know, besides winning a couple World Series, the one defining day in my career, no doubt about it, that I'll always be remembered by a lot of people in Milwaukee as well as myself and the teammates. And what we went through that first 2 weeks of that season was as fun as you're ever going to be, as well as the season for not going to the playoffs. You couldn't have had streaks and ups and downs and all that. And, I wish we would have been a wild card back then, or a second wild card. I don't even think we would have made the wild card back then. But winning 92 games, I think we did, and not get in, because I think we were the best team in baseball, when that season ended. But it was a fun time, and it's always something you joke about, and guys kid me about over there, the clubhouse guys, about Easter Sunday and all that. But obviously it's my defining moment and something I'll never forget.
In this week's edition of Let's Break It Down, we talk with Fox Sports Wisconsin reporter Sophia Minnert about what it's like to be on the television broadcast and what it takes to make it in broadcasting.
Let's Break It Down.
Time to break it down here on Brewers on Tap, and we are joined by Fox Sports Wisconsin sideline reporter Sophia Minnert. And Sophia, it's been a trying season, to say the least, for the Milwaukee Brewers this year. But as a television sideline reporter, you have to report on what's going on. You have to try and keep fans entertained on the TV. On the radio side, we can describe what's going on in the ballpark, but on the TV side, you guys are seeing all the pictures. So kind of describe a little bit about what you're seeing from your perspective with the Brewers this year and how you guys try and keep everything in perspective.
It's definitely been tough. Obviously winning makes our jobs a little bit easier, a little bit more fun. But that being said, we have to do the job either way. And we still enjoy it. I think even the losses, there's still silver linings. There are still good things. There are still great individual performances that are happening. And so, you try to showcase those when you can. And at the same time, be honest about what is happening. And it's not about pointing fingers or placing blame. It's about explaining, or trying to explain to the best that we can, what is happening or why guys are struggling or why they may be performing the way that they are. So I think one nice thing for us this season has been that we've seen some great individual performances, and we've seen some guys come up and perform at a high level. And it's exciting to see guys like Taylor Youngman come up, Tyler Wagner, Tyler Cravey, guys that we've kind of had on the radar or seen at spring training. And so it's great to see them, along with a guy like Shane Peterson, come up and perform.
Now, you've been doing this for a few years now at Fox Sports Wisconsin. When you got into the business and coming right out of school and you're a young woman, it's a daunting task to be on TV and to be doing it in the major leagues. How special is that for you?
It's incredible. And I tell people all the time, I feel so grateful to be in this position because I really consider myself like a hometown girl. I grew up in Madison. I went to school at Marquette University. So a lot of my life and my career has been centered here in Wisconsin. And I grew up, following the Brewers and the Bucks. So it's fun to cover these teams at a professional level. And I'm also aware that a lot of people don't get to work in their home market at any point in their career, let alone to start here. So I feel very fortunate in that regard. And I started small, just like everybody else, doing high school sports, WIAC, some college sports across the Midwest, and was fortunate enough to start with Fox in 2012.
Was there ever an aha moment for you when you were in school? You're like, hey, man, this is what I want to do. Or did you have this in your mind from when you were a little girl, maybe carrying around a notebook and trying to interview people? When was your moment that you said, hey, this is what I want to do?
I grew up around sports. My dad is the head football coach at Edgewood High School in Madison. So for those that have seen Remember the Titans, I grew up like that little girl in the movie, the coach of the daughter's football coach. That was how I grew up. I didn't know anything different. I went to practices. I went to games. My brothers and I both, we all played sports growing up. So I would go to my dad's games, and I was really interested in like the reporter part of it and listening in on the questions that they would ask him after games. And then I would read the articles the next day. And, it was between he and my grandfather who said, you could do this for a job. So That kind of sparked my interest, and I started in high school and just kind of kept going from there, trying to do whatever I could. And it's been, I just honestly, I can't imagine doing anything else.
When you were in high school and you were trying to interview people, were kind of people looking at you going, what are you trying to do here? You're just a high school kid trying to interview high school players. Did you ever get any backlash from people?
Honestly, I have to say I really didn't. And it was funny because, you know, I was in high school and I was going to these high school games and I was writing for Wisconsin Sports Network online. So it was cool to, like, my attitude was, I'm going to be there anyway, so I might as well do some work. I think it was fun, and I have to give credit to the professionals who were there at the time, the, you know, beat writers who were there, who just, you know, took me in and didn't really treat me any different, and they helped me a lot, and I got great feedback along the way. So I think that's obviously a huge part of why I've been able to get here.
Was there somebody on TV that you said, hey, that's who I want to be in 10 years or in two, essentially?
I have a lot of women that I look up to on the professional level. You know, Pam Oliver, growing up, she's been in the business covering the NFL for 20 years. It's incredible to me. Wendy Nix at ESPN, Samantha Ponder as well, Tracy Wolfson. There are a number of women that I watch, and I admire their work, and I admire the way they go about their work as well. So Rachel Nichols is another great example at Turner. So I think this business is full of women that you can watch and model yourself after. And I think what's great is everyone has their own style. So you don't need to mimic anyone if you don't want to.
That's a great question and a great point that you bring up, because a lot of people ask me, you know, is there a broadcast that you try and copy their style, or who did you learn from? So it's great that everybody can be unique, and it's such a position where you can create your own name for yourself.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. I think there's always people that you can look up to and say, you know, I like how she did that, or I like the questions she asks, or just their delivery or their style, their kind of personality on the air. And I think at the end of the day, you have to be authentic and you have to be genuine, and you can have those role models, but if you're not yourself, that's going to come through too. And you don't want to pretend to be somebody you're not. So that's something I always try to do, is just try to be honest, you know, with kind of who I am on the air and not be somebody I'm not.
All of us need friends in the business and people that have helped us out. I've had numerous, I'm sure you've had some too. Who's been your real mentor when you got into this thing?
I have to say I was fortunate to intern at ESPN when I was a junior in college, and so that's where I met Wendy Nix. She's been a terrific role model for me and just a great resource in terms of questions and feedback on demo reels and things like that. Alana Rizzo as well, Jen Latta in Chicago, Trenny Kuznarek in Boston. Jen and Trenny are both Marquette alums, so I connected with them at a young age, and they've just been great resources for me moving forward. And we kind of team up on some Marquette stuff as well. So I've been very fortunate. You know, I think what's really important in this business is that, as competitive as it is, there's also a lot of camaraderie that can be found here. And you know, you seek out those people that you can count on and go to for advice or just talk through things with.
Sophia Minard is our guest here on the podcast. And maybe something that a lot of people don't know about you is that you're bilingual. If, you know, growing up in Madison, people would say, well, there's no way that she's bilingual, but you are totally bilingual. That can be a very positive thing, especially in the game of baseball. Has it ever been a negative thing?
For the most part, I would say it's a positive thing. I do think it surprises people, that I am bilingual, or maybe that I am as fluent as I am. I think maybe the only negative thing is that if they don't realize that I speak Spanish, you can sometimes catch them in an unfortunate situation. Or also, you know, I don't want to use it as a tool to, like, create an advantage over others. And so I definitely, that would be, I guess, a possible negative, is that maybe others are uncomfortable because it creates this dynamic of what are you talking about? Or what are you saying? Is it something negative? Is it something about me? So that's never my intent. But, you know, there's a number of Spanish-speaking guys on this team, and that's what they're most comfortable speaking in. So, you know, if that's what they prefer to do, then I'm happy to do that, to make them comfortable.
Sports has its number of superstars in it. You know, you work for the Bucks, you work for the Brewers, and you encounter a lot of different big personalities. Has there ever been a time where you've felt intimidated by somebody's stature?
I have to say the first time I met Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, that was kind of a step back moment. I mean, he's physically intimidating. He's much larger than I am. Still at his age, he looks incredible. And also just, you know, the history of being on that Bucks championship team. He's one of the all-time best players. You can't say enough good things about him. So I think meeting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was definitely a step back moment for me.
Have you ever geeked out like, hey, man, I was a huge fan of this person growing up and I'm a little bit freaked out at the moment? Have you ever had a geek out moment?
You know, I think that's a great question, because I think it's important to remember, like, we're all fans of the game. Like, right. With what we do, obviously it's a job, but we go into this because we start out as fans. I don't know if I've had a real, true, like, freak out moment where I, like, lost all control. But I do think last year when Derek Jeter came through on his retirement tour, I think that was kind of a cool, like, just a unique moment of, like, you know, I probably never thought I would interview Derek Jeter, but here I am interviewing Derek Jeter. And I think there are moments like that where you recognize, like, this is a special or unique person in the sports world, and it's awesome that I get to, like, talk to them for 2 minutes, you know? So I think that was kind of a cool one in the baseball world.
It gets the butterflies going a little bit extra. Every day it seems like the butterflies go, but just a little extra oomph of butterflies that day, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time, like, we're, you know, the athletes deal with their own sense of kind of nerves, anxiety, butterflies, pregame jitters, whatever you want to call it, on a daily basis. Like, if you don't have that little bit of adrenaline as an athlete, you're not going to make it. And I think for us, it's still exciting to go on the air every day. It's still fun to do our shows because it's live, you know, you never know what's going to happen on live TV. And it's fun to kind of have that interaction back and forth. And the game itself, you don't know what's going to happen. So I think that's the best part of our job, is you can do all the prep work, but at the end of the day, once it's first pitch or the ball is tipped, you're just reacting. And so that's what's fun.
You mentioned that it is live and you never know what's going to happen. Do you have a most embarrassing moment that has at least been recorded? There might have been some that have not been recorded, but one that is on tape somewhere that might be number one track on your gag reel?
I have to say, I mean, people bring up the microphone incident from a few years ago. And it's not great when you see that, like, replayed all the time, or, like, the still images are not exactly very flattering. So I had no control over that situation. It could have been a lot worse. But it's not great to, like, see that over and over and over again, or have people remind you of that. You're like, yep, I was there. Still remember it.
I will say, tremendous poise. You just got hit with the ball and just kept on going. It's the first time I'd seen it this year, so I appreciate you sharing that with me and telling me that I could find it on YouTube, now that everybody on the podcast knows you can find it on YouTube too.
Thanks for that.
No problem. It's what we're here for. Breaking news. Do you have a preference, basketball or baseball?
I honestly don't. I think I like the differences in the two sports, and I like having the two sports because I think it would be hard to do just one. You know, I like in baseball that we're here every day. You get to develop the relationship so much more, you know, and we have a lot of time to get stuff in, just the nature of the sport. There's no clock. Conversely, in basketball, I like that it's a quicker pace, and things can change in a game in a hurry, more so than baseball. And so you're doing a lot of more reaction. You can dial in more on, like, individual matchups or incredible athletes and great performances. So I like having the two sports, and, you know, I'm certainly open to doing more.
I'll leave you with this. You travel a lot with this business, both with basketball and with the baseball side of things. Do you have a favorite city that you like to travel to? I know that's a hard-hitting question. I've been, you know, putting you on the hot seat here this entire interview, but do you have a favorite city?
I mean, I love going to Chicago. I know it's close, but it's fun to, like, go to Chicago. Wrigley, you know, it's got so much history. And then the United Center, I think, is one of the best places to see a basketball game, and that was evident over the playoff run. So I love Chicago. I know that's close. But San Diego is another favorite, just because it's San Diego, and what is there not to like? It's beautiful there every day. And East Coast, I would have to say, I mean, New York is an easy one, but I'll say D.C. as well.
That's pretty good. That's a good list. And you went both Midwest, West Coast, and East Coast, so you over-delivered as usual. Sophia, thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes with us. Great to get to know you, and I'm sure for the fans that are listening, too, just an opportunity to understand what you do on a day-in and day-out basis. It's a tough job, and you do a great job.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's fun to have you aboard, and you've been a great part of our crew, this daily crew. So we enjoy having you aboard, and thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Continued success.
Thank you. Same to you.
Checking in on the farm.
Bah.
We check in on the farm this week, and as always, remind you to check out our blog, Minor Details, at minordetails.mlblogs.com. And just a couple of minor bullet points, no pun intended. Jorge Ortega of the Brevard County Manatees continues to roll. On Monday last week, Ortega shut out the Jupiter Hammerheads, the Miami Marlins affiliate in the Florida State League, on just 93 pitches. Did not walk a batter in the process, and he's in the midst of a streak in which he has not walked a batter in 39 straight innings, which dates back to May the 12th, covering five starts, and he's walked just five batters all season. The effort was his fourth complete game of the year and his first professional shutout. He now has four complete games on the year, one of which was seven innings, but all three of his nine-inning CGs have taken under 100 pitches to finish. Saturday this last weekend, he was the starting pitcher for the Northern Division of the Florida State League All-Star Game. He threw, shockingly, a shutout inning on his 22nd birthday. Ortega owns a 6-4 record, and his earned run average at 1.78 is the third best in the league, and he has not allowed more than one earned run in any of his last six starts, and Florida State League opponents hitting just .202 against him. And how about last year's first-round pick of the Brewers, left-hander Cody Medeiros? He started at Miller Park on Friday as the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers were playing against the Beloit Snappers here in Milwaukee. And Medeiros tossed 5 2/3 no-hit innings while striking out seven in that 5-1 win over the Snappers. Fans of the ballpark that night got a chance to see the potential in that 19-year-old's left arm. And some scary news out of the Arizona League with first-rounder just a couple of weeks ago, outfielder Trent Clark. In just his second professional game on Sunday, Clark stumbled on the warning track and collided with the wall head first. Clark was down for about 15 minutes and needed a stretcher to be carried off and left the ballpark in a fire truck. The good news, however, is that Clark was coherent and moving later on that night, and per MLB.com's Adam McAlvey and Brewers assistant general manager Gord Ash, Clark is going to be okay, and the injury is not life nor career threatening. So good news on Trent Clark, and we hope he has a very speedy recovery.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
As mentioned earlier in the podcast, the Brewers are home for the rest of this week before heading to Philadelphia the beginning part of next week, and the Brewers renew their annual border battle with the Minnesota Twins. That series starts on Friday, June 26th through Sunday the 28th, as the interleague rivals meet in a three-game weekend series featuring a Jonathan Lucroy t-shirt giveaway on Friday night and a Paul Molitor bobblehead day on Sunday, and as many of you know, Molitor now the manager of the Minnesota Twins. For more details, visit Brewers.com today. And before we wrap up the show this week, just a quick thought on former Brewers outfielder Daryl Hamilton, who tragically died earlier this week. I didn't know Daryl personally, but I loved watching him as a player. He played the game hard, he played it with passion, and he played it the right way. Fans not only in Milwaukee but America got to know Daryl through his work on the MLB Network over the last couple of years and on the Brewers radio broadcast last season. I believe Brewers general manager Doug Melvin said it best, saying that Daryl was a wonderful player in Milwaukee, but more importantly, he was a true gentleman and a great friend to many. He will be greatly missed. It was an honor to watch Daryl Hamilton play the game with such passion. Our thoughts and prayers go to all of the Hamilton family, and may Daryl Hamilton rest in peace. That's it for this week, and don't forget to tweet your questions to @Brewers each and every week using the hashtag BrewersOnTap. Thanks to our fantastic guests, Brewers utility player Jason Rogers, bullpen coach Lee Tunnell, Kansas City Royals hitting coach Dale Swain, and Fox Sports Wisconsin Brewers reporter Sophia Minner. My name is Jeff Levering. Thanks for listening to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap.